Hey, everybody, and welcome back to The Overlay, a poker podcast brought to you by Paramount Social Club in Houston, Texas, and CCG Poker Radio. I have my co-host, cohort, co-everything, Brandon.
I'm just the co.
You think that's how Coco Chanel got her name?
Maybe.
It's possible.
It is possible.
I mean, there's many things that are possible. Episode 29, you said you were going to do the intro, and then I talked smack because I was like, I'll just do it. It's fine. And then that's the first time we've ever had to stop and start the recording, isn't it?
Right. 29 episodes in. First time we've stopped and restarted.
Yep. I was like, nope, because I promised I would hit up Paramount first this time. 28 to 1 is the ratio right now for CCG intros versus Paramount. So I figured it was high time that we gave a little due to our Texas folks.
And you literally said, all right, I'm going to do Paramount first. And right. He got on with his cheesy intro. I was like, hello, everybody.
Did it wrong.
Brought to you by CCG Poker.
Still did it wrong.
Screwed it up.
Yeah, it's all right. 29 episodes in. We've got plenty more to do. Episode 29. Today, we're going to talk about top mistakes poker players make just in general, right?
Yeah, I think everything from, you know, mistakes in the game, mistakes at the table, you know, little things that they can improve. You know, we talked last episode about, you know, the Twitch streamers and improving your game that way. Well, there's also things you can do at the table without studying that you can improve your game. And we're going to go over some of the mistakes that people make.
Nice.
And I make mistakes too. I mean, but it's about knowing that you make the mistakes and correcting them.
Right. Knowing is half the battle. That's what G.I. Joe said.
Yeah, I don't know anything about G.I. Joe.
He's awesome. You never watched the G.I. Joe cartoon? I forget that you're 10 years younger than me.
Right. That's got to be like...
It was 80s.
80s, right? Yeah.
You weren't around.
I never spent a day in the 80s.
I did. It was great. I got all of the 80s except 6 months. I missed 6 months. July of 80 is when I was born. All right. Anyways, back to reality. Top 10? We're going to do 10? Or just top poker mistakes? We're not going to give it a specific number because it may be more than 10 and maybe less than 10.
There's no way we're getting through 10 because, you know, we're going to go on tangents.
I think we should do like, we'll do a 5. Hit me up with one of yours. You're going to be my liaison and then we'll figure out what we're going to do. So take us down the path of poker perfection and how to fix our mistakes. Brandon, what is the number one poker mistake that players make?
Wow, the number one?
Number one. Doesn't have to be like the number one. I mean, these are all important, so there's no like, you know, statistical data that says this is the biggest mistake you could make. They're all bad.
They are all bad, but I think like, I'm going to go with defending the blinds too wildly.
No, I like that one because I'm a huge, yeah. I do this all the time. All the time.
And I think that people, you know, beginners, intermediate, advanced, they need to realize that the blinds they're gone. Like, you got to stop treating them like you have that money in the pot. And I mean, obviously it gets a little different in a tournament when you're down to 5 or 6 big blinds, because now all of a sudden a blind is worth 10, 15, 20% of your stack. That's a little bit different. But general,
right,
when you're in a cash game or a tournament where you have 100 big blinds, you can't look at it like, oh, I already have half the money in there.
Correct. It's still a bad call. Does not matter how you rationalize it. It's a bad call.
Right. And the reason being is because it's, in very simple terms, it's just like really hard to play hands out of position that are bad.
We talk about that a lot.
Even when you flop good, it's still not great.
Because you're out of position the entire time.
Right. And I know that we've beat position like a dead horse, where we say it over and over again. But guys, if you have mediocre hands,
it's 2020. Are you allowed to beat a dead horse now? Isn't that like frowned upon? You know, like in the horse community, okay. Like maybe jock. I don't want to alienate jockeys from our show by beating dead horses.
Yeah, actually, I'm going to go on a tangent right now.
Nice.
It only took four minutes
and 30 seconds for us to moderately go off track.
There's a bad beat section of SportsCenter, and I think it's on after the Monday night game every week.
How did I not know this? This is great.
And it's Scott Van Pelt. Absolutely hilarious. Probably the best segment on SportsCenter. And there was this horse that was in the lead, And coming around the final turn for the straightaway, he just goes off course and runs off the course, like into this little like doorway that's
like just goes
again.
Straight. Like
no, like yeah, he just keeps going straight. He doesn't make the turn.
He's like, screw it, I'm just gonna keep going.
3 weeks later, he does the same thing.
No.
So it was on Bad Beats like twice last month. And then last night, they just came out with a report on Bad Beats that said that the horse is barred from racing there ever again. And they did this whole like RIP, like it was fun while it lasted segment. It was an absolutely great segment. It was like they're making fun of the horse. Cause, like,
all right, honesty time here, Brandon. We're honest with our listeners. We've got almost 4,000 downloads. I feel like we got a solid crew of peeps that are listening to this, or at least they're conscious enough to hit subscribe and then never turn it off, which is cool too. We don't care. That horse got kicked out for being a jackass. No pun intended. Have you ever been kicked out of a casino for being a jackass? Truth time. Yes or no?
Yeah.
I have too.
One time.
What did you do to get kicked out of a casino? And do you want to tell us what casino it was? You cannot. You can be some anonymity.
It's fine. I won't go into too detail about it because I'm...
I think I know this story, but tell it anyways.
It's pretty upsetting. Yeah, I mean, it was like really late and... it was me and your sister playing at 1-2 PL at the Horseshoe. And there was a fella down from Milwaukee because he played. He's a big regular at Potawatomi. And he was down playing because it was the circuit time. And I don't know. It all started with, you know, he just was like picking on me the whole time. And I don't mean picking on me, just like, you know, trash talking, rooting for me to lose. And of course, like, I'm pretty wasted and have like 4,000 or 5,000 in front of me and like in
which
for
is
500.
A dangerous situation.
So I'm chirping back because it's fun and like, and then I just remember we got in like a 6K pot where I had aces in a flush draw and he flopped top two and he just held and you can only run it once there and he just held and I mean he just started running his mouth like nobody's ever run their mouth and it was fine to the point I brushed it off and I had like defused my end of the situation because I don't really care about the guy that's going to talk trash to me at the poker table, like whatever, like I don't really care. But then he started throwing some pretty offensive words out at me and Allison, at which point we both just double teamed him.
Nice.
And it got to the point where, like, I mean, it was like full blown. The dude, like, floor head security had to be called.
Nice.
Got kicked out. Like, I was in borderline tears. Like, it was crazy town. And like, the guy just got so far underneath my skin. It was like, I don't even care if I play here for a living and I'm going to get kicked out of here forever. Like, I just want to punch him in the face.
Nice.
And that's where, I mean, yeah, it was just like, it was just very uncalled for. And then I ended up seeing the guy at the next circuit. Like, the circuit's like February and October. This was in like February. In October, he started bringing stuff up again about it, at which case I just left. But he got a 24-hour ban as well, and he was in day two of the monster stack where he had to blind off and didn't make the money. Because
wow, that's a much bigger penalty. You were just playing cash games. Gross.
Yeah, so yeah, he had 24-hour ban, so he couldn't show up at noon for day two of the tournament the next day, which made me feel a little bit...
Yeah, that's definitely a much worse penalty than what you got, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh no, you're going to have to kick me out while I'm still up 2,000. I guess I'll go home. But... Yeah, what's yours? But I mean, the guy, like, let me say, on the scale of 1 to 10, like, he threw around some words that are like a 9 on the offensive scale.
Wow.
Like, I don't know what you use. Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not going to say him because, but I mean, it was
right,
bad.
Obviously.
But it was bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that is bad.
And that's the only time I've ever been kicked out.
I got kicked out for the casino doesn't take it very well when you rip up cards. And I ripped up cards. Yeah, and nice. He told me, if you rip up those cards, we're going to kick you out. And I was like, cool. I ripped them up. I don't remember. Because I don't know. I think I was playing blackjack, and I was pissed. And the dealer kept giving me crappy cards. I was like, if you give me a 10, I'm going to rip it. I'm going to rip it up right in your face.
And you busted.
And I ripped it up, and I threw it. I didn't throw it at him. I just, like, confettied it up in the air, and then security came over, and... I did get kicked out of an Indian casino in Minnesota one time, too, for saying a very inappropriate remark, which I will not repeat, but I didn't do it on purpose. It was an accident. But the dealer did, you know, needle me crazy town. I had lost all my money, and then on my last, like, $10 bet, I've been betting way more than that the whole time. I get a blackjack, and he literally goes, congratulations on your table minimum blackjack. I should have ripped up those cards too, but I didn't.
Yeah, that's a much more justified.
Yeah, he needed that one. And then I got asked to leave, which was great. So I actually have been kicked out of two casinos. Nice. I didn't get a 24-hour ban though. All right, so rule number two, do not get kicked out of the casino, which is a top poker mistake. That is like rule zero, don't get kicked
especially
out.
Especially when you're on day two of a tournament.
Like, yeah, that's a bad move. Not a smart move. All right, so number one rule we're going with is defending the blinds. Number two, Brandon, what is your second top poker mistake that players make that you can easily change?
I think it's like cold calling. Cold calling is like terrible in general. And like, for those of you guys who don't know what a cold call is, it's when like somebody opens in probably early position, because I mean, it doesn't have to be, but the pattern kind of goes, somebody opens in another position and then somebody three bets. And now you have no money in the pot and you just cold call this three bet. Like, there isn't too many hands that you should be doing it with. And in general, it's just somebody playing way too loose because they're trying to be gambly and they're trying, and this leaks off
negative
so
EV.
Much. Yeah, it's terribly negative EV play. I mean, there's like a few narrow random, not narrow random, that's a bad word, but there's a few narrow hands in your range that you should be cold calling three bets with, like just for instance, jacks, tens.
Yeah, and see, and I'm always
like,
the guy
are
that
like
wants
the three hands.
Right.
Like,
I want to cold call with like 8-9 suited.
Correct.
Like, oh, this is such a sweet, like, get 'em hand. And the problem that you run into is you get a bet from under the gun plus one, middle position, three bets it, gets to you, who's in like the button or the cutoff. And you're like, sweet, I'm going to have position on these two guys. I'm going to call the three bet. And then, of course, gets back to under the gun plus one. What's he do? He four bets. And then the next thing you know is you just dumped in money that you didn't have. Or worse, you end up getting caught in a hand for way more money than you wanted to get into it for.
And then you flop a pair of nines.
And then
it's
exactly.
You
exactly.
Flop a flush draw.
This is why you need to stop cold calling with crap hands, because
even
you
with
think
solid hands.
Well,
like, there's such a difference between
like ace jack. You would never call a three bet with.
Right. Especially when you have no money. And it's one thing to raise, get three bet, come back to you, and then
different
like,
scenario.
Call with your hand. Right.
Because cold calling is legitimate when you're facing two bets and you have not put anything in yet. You've got zero stake in the hand. You could easily just rip those cards up and throw them away and be perfectly fine.
Yeah.
I mean,
just
until
no need.
The floor comes over and kicks you out. But yeah.
Yes. Like, the range advantage they have under the gun opens are very, very strong. And then middle position three bets are also very, very strong. Like, you are now facing two very strong ranges,
premium hands,
whatever you have. Like, even jacks, you're just like, you kind of hate it, you puke in your mouth. Like, I guess jacks are too strong to fold here, so I guess I call. But those are like the specific situations. And then even then, you're almost just set mining jacks.
Correct.
Whenever the flop comes, a queen, a king, or an ace, now you're
you
just
know
no
you're
man's
not you're
land.
No yeah you're no good.
So you can just avoid these situations. And you know, in a cash game, in 1-2, guy makes a 12, guy makes it 40. You just fold for your 40. You just save 20 big blinds. That's $40 an hour. Like, when you put these in an hourly, like, that's a great hourly for a 1-2 pro. Like, $40 an hour. Like, Vinny, who grinded 1-2, would kill for a $40 hourly.
Right.
And, like, you can leak it all off right there on that hand by calling with 9-8 suited, 10-9 suited, jack-10 suited, because, ooh, it's a nice little cash game.
It looks so pretty.
It does. Well, cool. Play that hand when it folds to you and you can raise.
Right.
Or when you can three bet the button with that hand. Like, don't play it when you're facing, you have no money in the pot and you're facing two bets.
I like it. Cool. I think that's a good one. I like stop cold calling, because it's, again, it's funny when I listen to these or we talk about them, I was like, man, I totally do that. And I get stuck. And then I call the 40 and then it gets back to the under the gun guy and then he makes it, you know, 120 or 150. And then unless if the other guy just calls, then I'm like, well, shit, now I can put in another $100. And I'm playing in a $500 pot, right, or close to. In my mind, again, it's the mentality of the gambler, right? I bump up that pot. It's really only $420, and yet I'm like, it's a nickel pot. That's $500 in there. You know, I'm estimating high, and I'm like, all right, if I flop something yummy here, I can go nuts.
And then the problem is you price yourself into it. Like, if you call that 40 and then it goes 150 call, well, now it's 110 more and like you're actually getting a decent price.
Correct.
But now you're getting a decent price and you're leaking off
another
55 big blinds,
right?
with jack high.
Right. Oh, my example, I had nine high. So yeah.
Yes, it's a slippery.
And then
slippery
and
slope.
Then again, what do you do? You got 8-9 of spades. The flop comes 2 spades, king of spades, 10 of spades, 3 of hearts. Like, well, crap. Now is my spades good? I don't know. Bet. Now you're facing 2 more big bets, and you're just stuck in this really bad position, and you're getting involved in something that you really don't want to be involved in. I don't know. It's like,
and remember, you had $0 in the pot.
Correct. It's like, started. Do I really want to pick a fight with like Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield? And no. I'm Glass Joe. That seems bad. That was my punch out analogy. Yeah, did you like it?
I did. And I got that one. Is that 80s or that's early 90s? Got to be early 90s.
Yeah, late 80s, early 90s. I would say 90s.
Yeah.
Anyway, stop cold calling, kids.
Yeah. All right. Stop cold calling. That's it.
Number 3.
This is kind of an underrated one that, mm-hmm. like, I have become a pretty good master at this one, but other people aren't. Game selection.
Yeah. I never worry about this one, but I like it.
Right. Game selection, that you never worry about it, and it's just like, it's never even a thought for you. Game selection is so, so important. Just like table draws in a tournament is like the most variance underrated thing. Like, you can get table draws, like the $540 sit and go that happened last weekend, or $540 sit and go. Mm-hmm. One table was like dreamy as can be. Like, I would pay double to sit at that table. That's how good it was. Other table was 6 pros. And it's just like table draw is so random. And that gets into your game selection.
Especially when you're playing like a 2-table sit and go where,
you
know,
in a bad game. Don't play in a bad game.
Right. In that particular scenario, you don't have a choice. It's luck of the draw. Right. You know, there's 6 good players and 6 mediocre players. And it just happens that 5 good guys are sitting at one table and 1 pro is at the other table. Sitting up with a bunch of mediocre mops, like, pff, that guy's got his odds of winning have gone significantly up, right?
Yep.
Yeah, but so, you don't have a choice on that one. How do you
game
know?
Game selection. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, how do you know when you're in a cash game, like game selection? Is it the idea of if you can't spot the sucker at the table within a half an hour, then you're the sucker?
Honestly, kind of. Yeah. I mean, it's more, you can kind of feel it, right? I mean, if you feel that, like, it's going fold. Guys are down in their phone. Everybody's none of the stacks have moved in an hour. All of a sudden, everyone's got the same amount of chips. Mm-hmm. There's been one all in, and it's aces versus kings. It's like you kind of just feel that the game is kind of garbage. And I know that when we're in this pandemic and everything's six-handed, it's a little tougher because games can just change in a snap of fingers. Yeah. When one tight guy leaves and Greek John shows up, well, it's like, well, game's good.
Pew, pew, pew.
You know, and it's just like, it can change so fast. But if you don't have to sit in a bad game, ask for a table change. At least do try and combat it something. Go eat dinner. Maybe it'll change. I do it all the time at the shoe when it's 2:00 and the game sucks and I'm in for 500 and I got 400 3 hours later and nobody's playing everything and everyone's chit-chatting. I go take my meal. I go take an hour. Like, I'd rather just go eat at the buffet or go play some wildlife.
It's the idea of recognizing when, you know, trying to force it. Well, this is what I do. I get into a bad game. It's either super nitty or super crazy, and I'm going one way or the other because of the fact that it's super nitty or super crazy. And then I don't ever take the time to say, may I have a table change or two? Maybe I should take a break and go walk around, come back in a little bit, see if the game changes or a couple players, maybe some new blood comes in. I never do that. I always just power through.
If you're the guy that's driving the action, like you end up being the sucker in the situation because then everyone else is just going to wait you out. Mm-hmm. You just need to like combat them by waiting them out or just leaving. So, when I grinded 1-2 at the shoe all the time, I'd be like, yeah, this game sucks. I'm just going to make it 15 every hand. Well, then I'll get in for 800 every day and lose. And I'd be like, why did I do that?
Right. Game selection. And now we're not referring to playing above your bankroll. This is just an actual game selection in the proper limit that you should be playing in.
Right.
Is getting the idea of finding out what's the flow of the table. You know, how are the chips moving around? What are people showing down with? You know, I mean, is every hand a premium hand that they're winning, you know, that you see at showdown? Is ace king is like the worst you're seeing, ace queen? Then you need to change your play or change tables to get out of there because, again, nobody wants to sit at a 9-handed game where there's 8 local pros and you're the tourist. That's bad.
I mean, I know it kind of sucks. And you're like, I drove all the way to the casino. If the game sucks, just go home, come back tomorrow. And I know that doesn't fit for everybody. Switch. Maybe move
tables.
Friday. Yeah, move tables. You know, maybe Friday's the only day you can play poker. Like, and you drove to the casino. You're not just going to go home. But like, if you have that ability to just come back and play tomorrow, just drive home.
Skip it. Leave. Yeah. Try new. Yeah. Don't force a game that you don't need to. All right. Rule number four. That is the top broken or poker mistakes. What do you got, Brando?
Well, you kind of let us into it. I'm just going to go with bankroll management.
Yep. I mean, I hate when I hear people say, when you see a guy who normally plays 1-1 and does well, you know, plays the whole day. You don't see him ripping a bunch of chips. You know, whatever. It's game selection. I mean, for some people, playing 1-1 at $40 buy-ins, I mean, that it is what it is. Like, it's not a big deal. And if you're consistently winning and cashing out for 3x your buy-in, like, that's awesome, you know? But then then you see that guy start moving up to 1-3, or the 1-3 player that wants to start playing 5-5, or the 5-5 player that now wants to play 5-10, or the 5-10 guy that's now going to bump up to, you know, 10, 25, 50. Like, shit gets real fast.
It does. And we had an entire episode on bankroll management, didn't we?
I believe so. Let me see. What episode was that, Brandon? You would ask me a question like that.
On the spot. I figured you have it always pulled up.
Probably I do, and I'm just trying 12. To read it. Bankroll management variance and downswings. That was episode 9. That was during quarantine. So
yeah,
that was a good one. It's actually one of our more popular episodes, is the bankroll management variance and downswings, kind of how to play through them, how to choose your bankroll. So that's a good one to listen to, considering this is a top mistake that poker players make, if not the top mistake. I don't think we're going in order here, but if you honestly ask me what most people do incorrectly is they pull the freaking, Mike the Grinder from freaking why can I not think of the name of the movie? Holy cow, Rounders, where he's like, I'm gonna take a shot. Like, I, you know, well, yeah, that's great, but like, why'd you just dump your whole life roll into this one game? Like, it can happen. You can run into your second full house, literally loses to the only other guy at the table. That's it. Then what are you gonna do?
Yeah, and I did it for years in my early 20s. I had literally, no joke, working at CCG, $600-800 to my name every Monday. I'd march into the casino with 700 of that 800 and fire 1-2. And then, you know, sometimes I lost it on Monday and was done for the week. Sometimes I lost it on Thursday and was done for the week. But like, it's just so hard to spin it up when you don't give yourself enough bullets or enough chances. And I mean, if you got 3 bullets, you're going to go on a 3-bullet downswing in every stake, no matter how good you are at some point in time, always. So, yeah. Save up the money and wait until you have enough bullets to actually grind through it. And I know it's tough when we're talking. This is a lot more applies. That doesn't make any sense. But to the internet game where you can just keep going down stakes. Okay, $1, $2, go to 50 cent, $1, go to 25, 50 cents, go to 10 cent, 20 cent. You can go all the way down and you can move up and down stakes a lot more comfortably. And live, it's like, well, 1-2 is kind of the lowest. So. But really, when you're at 2-5 and you start going on this downer, move down to 1-2, move back up, you know, fluctuate your game so you just don't have 20% of your life roll on the table at all the time. I mean, you're just going to go bust over and over and over again. And it took me 7 years to realize it. And finally, one time I was like, you know what? I'm going to save this $600 that I have to play for 3 months. And now I have a $5,000 bankroll to play with. And, you know, all of a sudden you're a lot more comfortable and you can gamble with a flush draw if the odds are right, because, you know, if you lose, you can just pull $200 out of your pocket. Whereas if you're playing for, you know,
if you're playing for, if you bust and you're actually bust, like,
right,
that's a different game you're playing. It's a different mentality.
You're not playing the same game.
You're playing. It's not correct. You should be playing where you can afford to fire 3 bullets. Whatever that price is or whatever you're comfortable playing with, play the stakes that makes that appropriate, right?
Right.
Because some rich guy might be like, well, I don't want to play 1-2. Like, that's silly. I don't care if I win or lose. Fine. Then he can play his 1-2 for a normal person is actually 5-5, and that's fine. He'll end up going up or down depending on how much he decides he wants to win or lose, or he'll start playing pickleball.
We should have a pickleball sponsored
I will try to find one. Event.
a pickleball meetup.
Pickleball meetup. Ooh, you heard it here first, folks. If you're interested in a pickleball meetup, hit us up at @theoverlay_pod on Twitter. You can also check us out at CCG Poker on Twitter, and we'd be happy to answer either one of those. I check CCG and the Overlay Twitter tin a ton. Let us know. All right, Brando, round us out. Number five. Brandon's top five.
Well, I think
you ever want to tap out, let me know. I'll push it in there.
Like tilting.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Kind of one. But I also think that like not folding when you know you're beat is another one of those kind of go hand in hand. You're much more likely to not fold a hand when you know you're beat when you're tilting.
So kind of learning to control your tilt and when to actually punt.
Yeah, I mean, when you get raised down the river and, you know, the four-card flush got there and you don't have a heart, it's like, I know you got half your chips in there. Like, I know it sucks, but, like, if they're never bluffing because they can't be bluffing, they aren't bluffing. Like, it doesn't matter that you start the hand with 10,000 chips and you're going to fold and you're only going to have 2,500 left. Like, if you're beat, you're beat. And I hate everyone's like, nah, I know you got me, but I call. Well, how many times do they actually have you? Almost always, right? Every time you're like, eh, you got there.
Yeah,
but
no,
I
you're good. I can't.
You're good.
Yeah, I call anyways. Like, it's such
and
a dummy
they
call.
They always show you the winner. It's like, why can't you just fold? I'm asking you.
Oh, you're
right. Why can't we fold?
I thought this was rhetorical.
No.
I don't know. Pride. Pride should not take any place in a poker game. It always does.
Because the one time you're bluffing, they're going to show it to you and you're going to be all upset and it's just going to be like, oh. But the nine times they show you the winner, you just punt it off the rest of those chips.
Well, isn't that like the whole idea here of the odds? Like if you're only good 1 out of 10 times, then you should fold, right? Like it's not a profitable decision. If you're good 6 out of 10 times, then yeah, make that same decision 6 out of 10 times. It's a profitable play. But if you're only profitable 1 out of 10 times, you shouldn't be calling, correct?
Right.
I mean, isn't that the logic that we should be going with? If you think this the guy's the bluffing 1 out of 10 times, be like, I fold. You're good. And then he shows, ha, 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 I had nothing. And then it comes to our favorite line where he goes, I only had king high. Like, ha, ha, jackass. I only had queen high. That. You were good.
I love that. Trying to make a hero call with a pair of fours, and then you end up folding, and they're like, ha, I only had a pair of sixes. It's like,
good
ha,
jerk, I had
you
fours.
Were good.
I had no business being in the hand. But no, that's good. I liked that one. Learning to fold, like, right? Like, learning when to just concede. At sometimes you should just walk away, let it go. There's no shame in folding. I do like when people say that, when there's like, you know, there's a big action all the way through and then the guy makes another bet and you're like thinking about it, or he goes all in and you're thinking, and like the flush hit on the river and now you're like, is my two pair good, or you got counterfeited, whatever the case may be, and you're like thinking and the guy's like, no shame in folding, kid. I always want to punch old guys when they say that.
There's
no shame in me punching you in the face either. And then it's like, are they pulling a... I'm saying this to reverse psychology you, to get
leveling,
you to call,
yeah.
To kind of throw a little needle, like, no shame in folding, you know? And then it's like, wait, does he want me to fold, or is he reverse psychologizing? Reverse psychologizing.
Yeah, this is why speech play should not be allowed in the game. There's unlimited levelings you can do.
Yeah, it ends up being like the Princess Bride, where he's like, but you thought, I think you could have thought that I did this, and I put the poison over here. Like, no, it's just nobody thinks like that. It's in front of the other guy. That's it. Number six. I'm going to go with number six as...
Okay, go ahead.
Since that one was just learning to fold, I think you do need to go over playing on tilt.
Oof. You play a lot more on tilt than me.
I do. Everybody knows when I'm on tilt too, because I get super quiet and very grumpy.
I think that's even worse. It's one thing if you're tilting, but people don't know it, and you kind of disguise it.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Like, because when you're tilting and everybody knows it, it's just like
that's
the whole thing.
Bad scenario. Yeah, you don't want to do
just
that.
Looking around, like, oh boy, he's a ticking time bomb, and who's gonna get it?
Who's gonna get the explosion, the shrapnel? How far will that shrapnel go? Some guys are loose cannons and they play, you know, I don't know. I know a guy who I play golf with, and he swears he plays better golf when he's angry, which is like the equivalent of being on tilt in a poker game. Like, he enjoys being mad. I can't play golf and be mad. Just doesn't work for me. I never play good. If I get mad, it's going to get worse. I have to, like, full-blown hippie zen, like, control myself, be like, all right, let it go. That was one hole. Whew. Go to the next one. So, like, I take golf much more serious than I do poker. Poker, I'm always like, man, whatever. I normally get more pissed when a guy does something angly or shitty, where I'm more mad that they kind of disrespected the game, less than I'm mad that I got beaten in a hand. You beat me in a hand, you beat me. It is what it is. Like, I'm not going to be mad at you, or I'm not going to be pissed about it. But, like, I will get mad if somebody does something kind of, you know, that brings the level of the game down. Does that make sense?
Right. Yeah.
Like the guy talking smack to you guys because he beat you in a pot, that, like, you really, that's, everybody's getting in on either side there, and everybody's happy with the path that they chose. Nobody's pissed. It's not like anybody made a bad call. Or even if they do make a bad call, who cares? Like, why are you belittling somebody who made a bad call and either won or lost? Like, leave it alone.
You want that.
Yeah. You know? It's not good for the game. Anyways.
Tilting, in a cash game, if you're tilting, I mean, I know this is easier said than done, but just like, take a break, walk, go home, even go home, or just go get dinner, or just brush,
at least
it
go
off
to the bathroom, right? Like, yeah, if just right, take a small break, get the
five hands of you not at the table, you know, back to kind of reset yourself. Even if you're not full blown, it's just when the tilt compounds and it's just every hand, you're just blast, blast, blast. You almost have no shot.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have no shot. At least if you can compose yourself a little bit, like, I find I do it in the big tournaments where the big $1,600 main events, like, I'll run it up and I'll find a double up, and then, like, I'll just lose, like, king, queen to ace, or I'm sorry, ace, king to ace, queen. I'll just hit a queen. And it's like, even though I only lost half my chips and I'm back to starting stack, and there's literally guys walking in the room with the same stack as me, it's over for me. Like, that's it. I'm tilted, and, like, I always just, I'm spamming six people on a group chat, like, oh, I should have had 120,000. Like, why can't I ever win a 70-30 early in the tournament? Blah, 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 blah. And next thing you know, five hands later, I'm getting in with pocket fives against kings and I lose.
Right.
It's just, you know, and it just, and obviously if I was playing well, I would just muck the fives pre-flop or limp and call a raise and then fold, you know, and just never get it in. But it'll be okay. Like, you, like Maria Hall always says, you can lose big pots and still have chips. That's
you
why.
Build a chip stack so you can lose big pots and still be in the tournament.
Yeah.
Which I think is an incredible
line.
Oh, it's such a freaking mind bender. It's like, whoa, that's so good. It's like, now I can play a big pot. And even if I don't get through, it's no big deal. I still got chips, a respectable. I'm not short stacked. Like, you start over. Like, you get a freaking get out of jail free card or a free life.
And everybody looks at it like, oh my gosh, I could have had, I should have had
don't.
This many chips.
No. Can't Bad. Spend your whole life looking backwards. Bing bong. That's a great overlay quote. Don't spend your whole life thinking of the woulda, shoulda, couldas of poker. Because woulda, shoulda, couldas, I'd be a main event champion four times over.
Yep. I mean, and you know how many people have times, lost but... huge chips, huge pots for chip leads deep in the main event, and they still win it?
Yeah.
Because they have good mental composure. Like,
keep going. Don't let that is funny, and I do want to make that. I don't know if that should be like number 6.5 is taking a bad beat late in a tournament in that exact scenario. You got a ton of chips. You're going to win a massive pot, close to chip leader. You're going to be the freaking chip leader in a big tournament with a huge payday with like four tables left, and the guy sucks out and hits his two or three outer, and you're just back to a normal stack, that should not put you on tilt. All that's going to do is make you play poor from then on out, and it's like you turn a moderately bad, not even a bad situation. Like, you just went from the potentially to be a chip leader to now you're just back to where you started. You didn't lose or gain anything, right? Like, you just got a free roll to be the chip leader. You lost. No big deal. Move on and go forward. Continue to play good poker. The problem is people end up being like, oh, man, I totally could have, blah, blah, blah. And then the next thing you know, it's like three hands later, I was out of the tournament. Right?
Yep.
Because you go on tilt from
it's
a potential
downward
winner.
Spiral.
Yeah, downward spirals are bad. Are there any upward spirals? How do I get on an upward spiral?
you win the pot.
Yeah, maybe that's true. There's always a silver lining. Silver lining is sometimes you win that pot and then you go on to win the tournament. But then I go crazy because I don't know how to play with a chip stack. I only know how to play with a medium to low stack. I do not know how to play with... Remember when I was the chip leader at the... Self-brag. Remember when I was the chip leader at the WSOP PLO event and I was a chip leader at the final table and you were texting me some like Brandon-isms like, you need to bop a bop, do this and do that. And I was so excited. And then what did I end up doing?
You lost half your
punted pitch. Off like two-thirds of my stack. Got it down to where we were at. I went from first out of nine players to when we got down to like six, I was like
four out of six or five.
I was
six,
like, yeah. Me and four and five, me and whatever, we were very close. We were basically four and five. It could have been within a big blind or two of each other. So we were basically the second smallest stack at the table. So I went from the largest stack at the table to the second smallest stack at the table. Still end up getting second. I didn't allow myself to go on tilt. I didn't allow myself to be upset. I was like, I'm making good moves. I'm opening. I'm three betting. I'm doing good stuff. It's just, I'm just not connecting. Like the other guys just get
run into it. Like that, it's not a foolproof system.
And it did work a couple times. Like I ran up my chip stack pretty good. And then I, instead of like easing off the accelerator, I just kept my foot mashed on the ground. It didn't work.
Yeah.
Eventually, you got to hit the brakes.
Sometimes you're just going to
hit the wall.
Tournament, though.
Yeah. All right. Number seven. This is one I want to throw in because it's one I've been kind of looking at some like, you know, rookie mistakes and things of that nature. Showing your cards. When you win a hand and you don't have to show a card and you end up feeling bad for the guy or you want to do something, I feel like a lot of new players end up showing their cards very frivolously.
Yep.
And they don't need to. There is a lot to be said about not showing your cards and not allowing really good players, when you get to see how you played that ace queen, they are going to use it against you. And you should know when you show those cards with no reason to show them that you're just giving them free info. Like here's some cliff notes on how I play poker and how to beat me next time.
Yep. It's like here. Yeah. It's like a school teacher handing you like the answers to the test.
Right. Here's a practice quiz, which is basically going to look like the exact quiz you're going to have next time. So just recognize these different types of questions and then you're good to go. And then I just feel like they can really narrow down your range. Ugh, I'm throwing out some great poker terms today.
Yeah,
they can
are.
Really narrow down your range. And again, they'll know how you're going to play a big ace. They know how you're going to play middle pocket pair when you flop a set. Like it's just don't show those cards unless you absolutely have to. Let's do one more. One more.
I think really quick to touch on that. If you have a reason to show your cards, like you have a big whale that's going to go on tilt when you show them this bluff, like that's a different thing. Like if you're going to get a reaction out of somebody to show your cards to then better you more than the information that they get, like that happens sometimes, but that's very rare. Not very rare.
But again, I mean, you have to be aware of your betting patterns. Actually, I'd like to throw one in if you don't mind. Number eight. Where is my thing? I lost it. Here we go. Using the same size bet on the flop, turn, and river. I find that I see a lot in cash games where people will continually make the same size bet regardless of the pot size. Like, whatever. It's a 1-3 game, then they make it 25, and then the turn's 25, and then the river is 25. It's like, where the hell are you coming up with these numbers? Is it your locker combination? Like, seriously.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a rookie mistake.
Thinking of the idea of like showing your cards, like if you're making very similar sized bets all the time and then you show your cards, like the better players are going to recognize that and start to put two and two together and be able to put you on hands because of the way your betting pattern is not changing. People need to be more aware of that betting pattern, right?
Like if you go 25 on flop, 25 on turn, 25 on river, and you show top pair and top kicker, or like top pair
shitty kicker,
one pair of hands, yep. Like they're going to know that like the next time you do that, like they're going to just pop the
just
river
gonna, on. Yeah, just going to jam you on the river and you're going to just instantly fold like Tiny Tim on, no, like Uncle Scrooge on Christmas Carol. Nah, none of those work. Anyways, go ahead.
Oof. Wait, go ahead. You just passed off to me after that brick.
What yeah, I just threw up. I just threw up a huge half court. I just literally knocked out a cheerleader. That's how off my basketball toss was here. It's awful. I will say this. I do kind of enjoy, I like basketball better now without the crowd noises. It's weird. I like the screens and stuff. I just, it feels different. I kind of, and I'm not a big fan of NBA basketball. I don't watch it on the reg, but I've noticed when it's on now, I'm more, I don't want to say like attracted to it. Like, yeah, more. Yeah, visually. Yes, I'm visually like, whoa, that's cool. Like I'm attracted into it. Yeah. Like it looks, I can't describe it. It looks like a video game or something. It just, it looks super cool. I think they should, like when you're looking at baseball, it's like big empty field. It's like, man, why don't they just play in some little league team, like in some park in Chicago? They might as well just go there. Like randomly, they should have like, Cubs are just going to be at freaking, you know, whatever park, and then that's it, you know? Yeah. Just playing a little league field. Like, why do they need to play at Wrigley? It's like, it just seems like a lot of work to do it. I get it. Where else are they going to play? But with nobody in the stands, it's like, man, do they have like one security guard there? Like, what are they doing?
Yeah, for sure. I know the NFL stadiums still have full security because then they can pay everybody. They have full security.
I did,
even when there's no fans.
One of the commentators mentioned this at the NFL was that in week one, 2020, that it was the Broncos game. So it was the Monday. It was either the Sunday night game or the Monday night game.
That was the Monday night game.
So it was the Monday night game, and they had 500 fans in the field or in the stadium. And those 500 were what you call it. Friends and families of the players,
so right?
They weren't open
like
to the public.
Special invites,
girlfriends, yeah. Brothers, friends, whatever. I guess that's pretty specific on friends and family. And it was funny. The girl who was doing the commentating was like, "Oh, it's 500 of the friends and family of the Broncos and whatever team they were playing." And she's like, "And just so you guys know, the concession stands are open." And I was like,
"Yeah,
that's dope."
I heard that. I watched the game. Yeah, I heard that on the game too.
I also bet on New Orleans, and they just. I mushed.
Oh,
them.
Last night? Yeah. Oh, I've been on the Raiders. Oof.
Yeah, oof.
The Breeze is old now.
Yeah. No good. No mo. They're going to trade him to Tampa Bay someday. That's where good quarterbacks go to die. What?
I got two more quick ones.
Quick. Hit a mommy.
How much time we got? I got like the fancy play syndrome where you try and do something really cool and try to be Tom Dwan and like you end up just not making as much money as if you were just standard Joe Schmo playing in Aces, how you're supposed to play Aces, or you're playing a little more fancy because you're trying to do something cool and you end up losing the big pot. It's just like you don't need to have all these cool pro.
It's a lot of extra
plays
parts
in your playbook,
right? Like this, it doesn't work.
Try that sometime else, not when you have Aces deep in a tournament,
right?
Play it how you're supposed to play, and if they punch you the chips with pocket jacks, then you cooler them and let it be. Don't let them off the hook because you're trying to do something fancy. Because you read it somewhere that you should be four bet block a bluff in the river here.
Oh, do you mean like possibly you watched one of your favorite poker content creators and you need to know who's the who's who of poker content creators? Then you should listen to episode 28 of the Overlay, a poker podcast, brought to you by CCG Poker Radio and Paramount Social Club. Number 10.
Nice little promo.
Top 10 mistakes. So number 10, close us out.
Playing small pocket pairs.
I think
to set mine too much.
I think it's in general, it's just playing, you know. Yeah, I guess that's, I was going to say like, you got to stop chasing flush draws and straight draws. And at some point, like you need to realize that your sixes are no good or your jacks are no good. Like there's two face cards out there and there's two other players in the hand. Like get rid of it. You're never going to win. Why? You're just chasing good money after bad.
Yeah. I think, you know, people, the problem is set mining is just so like, oh, I got twos here. If I flop a two, it'll be so disguised and I can get implied odds and maybe they'll have ace king and it'll come ace five deuce and I'll get all their money. Like that's all great and everything, but you only flop a set like 12% of the time. It's like 1 in 9 or 1 in 8 or something like that. I'm just making numbers up, but that's pretty close.
1 in 9 is probably close. Yeah.
I mean, if you're like, so that's, and how often are you going to win the hand with deuces when it doesn't come a deuce?
The thing that gets
me
is
how many other good flops are there with deuces?
Right. It's like you need somebody to get a second best hand. I always find when I'm like drawn to a flush draw and it's like you flop spades and you've got like ace 10 and you've got nothing else. And you pretty much put the guy on, you know, middle to large pocket pair, you know, queens, jacks, tens, whatever. You might think your ace is good, maybe, but then you're worried about kicker problems. But it's like you end up chasing this flush draw the whole way down, and then I'm thinking, man, if I call this bet on the turn and I actually get the spade, what are the chances that he's actually going to call any kind of bet whatsoever? So it's like I'm really calling and
just to win the pot.
Just to win the pot as it is now. I'm putting in money with no potential money coming later, where it's like it's different. Like with Omaha, when there's four guys in the hand, you get the nut. You know, like, I mean, there's so many different redraws. It's like I'm going to get paid off because I'm hoping somebody has the king high flush or whatever the case may be.
Right. It's just so much easier for,
big hands
run to other big hands.
And again, it's like, why am I chasing a flush when I'm never going to get paid on it? Even if I catch it, it's like, I'm going to chase a rabbit around, catch it, and then go, who wants to buy a rabbit? Nah, nobody does. Cool.
Example, if like the flush comes on the turn or the straight comes on the turn, they clearly have it, and all you have is a set.
Correct.
It's like, why are you calling pot on the turn with a set? If the board pairs, like you're
never getting
get
paid off
trouble.
On the hand. If heads up, you know damn well the guy's got a flush. You've got, you know, multiple outs to a full house. Like, you're never getting paid on that. The board pairs, he's going to bitch fold.
Right.
Like that?
I do. Like, you're better off, like, calling with a flush, and then when the board pairs, try and bluff the boat.
Correct.
Because then at least, like, you know, it's different. If you know he's always going to fold when the board pairs,
well, that's
like,
when
then
you
don't
can,
always just chase full houses.
Correct. That's when
use
you can
your
like,
other hands.
Well, it's like that's when you can use like your ace blocker where you know he doesn't have the nut flush. It's like, well, now I can try. You know what I mean? Like you can try to do different things, and that's where, be careful of that because that's rule number 9, fancy play syndrome, which is difficult. I have a tendency to, in Omaha only, I don't do it for Hold'em. You give me 2 extra cards, and apparently I turn into Tan Duan, and I want to get super fancy. It's great.
So
never works.
Last thing, and you know why that's a block? You know why the blocker bets don't work in Omaha? I'm going to go out there and just say it. It's because people don't play the hand like they have the nut flush draw from the start, so then people sniff it out by the river that they never actually had it from the start. Like, really quick example, if there's 2 spades and you have the naked ace of spades and you're on the button and you raise preflop, and now there's 2 spades on the flop and you have the naked ace of spades, if you check the flop, like, what are the odds that you actually have the nut flush draw? Because you'd probably 0. Bet it. So then the turn comes a spade, a guy leads out, you're like, ooh,
I'm gonna try to fancy play here. This yeah,
so you raise, and then the guy's like, what is he raising with? I call. Then the river comes and he checks and you pound it on the river like, ha ha ha.
Then he calls you a queen high spades.
And he calls you a queen high spades and you show
and then
the
you're mad.
Spades. Like, wow.
How do you call there, bro? That?
Because
you checked the flop.
Because you checked the flop.
Right.
Exactly.
So pay attention to
the You need to realize that you have to paint the same story throughout the hand. Like, you have to bet the flop with the naked ace of spades. So when the spade comes on the turn, you almost have to play it like you have the spade.
This is why I never bluff and I never hero call, because I never think about it that deep. I'm always like,
people don't think about what happened on the flop.
This smells like a good opportunity to bet here, and I can maybe get him off. And it's just they end up doing exactly what you do. To be like, no way this guy actually didn't bet the flop with the nut flush draw. It doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't. Nobody
Which
does
is
that.
Why then you'd have to, like, you're good when you can balance it sometimes.
And I actually do, right? And then turn it, check call, and then and then raise the river with the nuts there. I mean, the guy's like, no way you got it, bro. And then it's like, haha, don't bro me, flush guy.
Because like I actually got it. Correct.
Right. Because I have the nut flush.
Paint the picture from the beginning, just because the board texture changes on the turn. It's like, ooh, maybe you pops in your head on the turn, like,
right.
Oh man, that's got to be a bad card for them. I'm going to just start blasting away. Well, what did you just hit there that actually makes sense?
The story's got to be believable, and that's very difficult to sell.
From start to finish.
And you got to be able to think about it from the start to finish. What could you have done from the beginning that will actually change it? Well, awesome.
That's
pretty
it.
Cool episode. I knew we were going to go long on this one. It's almost 50 minutes, and the same principle. It's like when you start going and talking about, poker mistakes in general, when you start thinking about them, you're like, well, yeah. So hopefully you listen to this episode and this will eliminate some of those top mistakes that poker players make. Brandon, do you have anything to say before we go? Like, spade and neuter your pets? Like,
no,
Bob Barker used to always say,
go there.
Do you want to say Omaha is the future? Learn or die?
Yeah, you really should. Everybody needs to.
Everybody should be playing Omaha.
$1 an hour crash course from Brandon just to get new players in the game.
Just do Omaha flips. When people want to do Texas Hold'em flips, I want to murder them.
Punch them in the face.
I want to stab them.
I don't understand the game. I'm like, no, I don't care.
It doesn't matter. Just flipping. It's all up. This is the best time to learn and figure out what you have because of the fact that you're just putting $5 up and you're flipping it over and it's great.
Super Omaha fun. Is the future. I like that.
Omaha is the future. That's our new podcast.
Learn or
Season
die.
Season 3. Omaha is the future. Learn or die. Great. Thanks for listening, everybody. Make sure you leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Hit that subscribe button. And always, 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 if you can leave us a review, we would greatly appreciate it. I promise you, everybody who's left a review so far has gotten a personal thank you from Brandon or myself, mostly because we know each and every person who has left us a review. So we thank you very much for Yeah, we do.
Yeah, that's true.
Dallas, huge shout out. He still listens to all. We haven't seen him in forever, but I miss playing wildlife with no Dallas is just no fun. It's true. Episode 29. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Farewell.
Bye.